everyone. This is DJ Jazzy J, and welcome to this week's show, Tasty Time, where we will pair your food with your mood here on Penguin Radio. I'm here every Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m., so tune in for the next hour while I bring you tasty and easy recipes, restaurant critiques, and much more. Every Thursday, we discuss things that might help the average cook do some great things in the kitchen. So, hi, everyone. I hope you all are doing well. So the question of the day for this week is, you can cook them, mash them, dehydrate them, reconstitute them with moisture to make a dough, cut into uniform size and shape, and package in an airtight container. They were introduced in 1969 by Procter & Gamble. What were they when they started out, and what is the name of the final packaged product? So you will hear the answer to that if you stay to the end of the show today. At the end of the hour, I will let you know the answer to that question. So today's random helpful tip of the day is to use a wooden spoon and place it on top of pots to keep them from boiling over. And this, you just place it on top of the pot without the lid on to keep the bubbles from boiling over when you're boiling certain things. It stops it from boiling over. So that's interesting. I found that interesting. So today's first dish, the easy recipe to start off with, is my family dish, and I called it DJ Jazzy J's homemade margarita pizza. So like I've said many times throughout this show, I am Italian, and I absolutely love making dishes that are of my culture, as do most people. So today, I brought with me my pizza recipe. And this is a really simple one. It's one that I feel like anyone in the kitchen could really do, as long as you follow the recipe. And even if you don't, you can play around with it too. So the ingredients include flour, yeast, olive oil, water, tomato sauce, mozzarella cheese, tomatoes, basil, and salt and pepper. So it's your standard, typical margarita pizza. So the way you make this is you preheat the oven to 450 degrees Fahrenheit or 230 degrees Celsius. And in a medium bowl, you dissolve the yeast and I forgot to add one ingredient is the sugar. So you dissolve the yeast and sugar in warm water and that you let stand until it's creamy. It takes about 10 minutes to do so. Then you're going to want to stir in flour, the salt, and the oil, the olive oil. You're going to beat until smooth and let it rest for 5 minutes. Then you're going to turn dough out on a lightly floured surface and pat and roll it into a round. The easiest way I found to do this, I kind of just knead it with my hands and I spread it out with my hands. I found the rolling pin, it kind of like, at least for me, the one I have in my kitchen, it kind of gets stuck to the dough, even though you're supposed to flour your rolling pin first. I just have found that it kind of sticks to the pizza dough. I'm not really sure why, but I suggest just doing it with your hands. Plus, it's more fun, and you can, like, especially, I said many times, like, a lot of these recipes that I've shared with you guys, you can make them with your kids or just other family members, and it's so much fun to be in the kitchen with other people, and you just have fun with it, and you can, like, you know, pretend you're actually, like, in a pizzeria, and you can try and, like, toss the dough a little bit. I think that's kind of fun. I've done that before. and, like, so you just want to, like use your hands to spread the pizza dough out. So then after you do that, you are going to transfer the crust to a lightly greased pizza pan or a baker's peel dusted with corn oil or any kind of, I mean, you can really use the olive oil that you used previously. I mean, cause the olive oil is going to go in the dough mixture, but you have the leftover olive oil as well. And you put that on the sheet. And I've seen people do this in a number of ways. If you don't have a pizza pan per se, you can use like just a regular baking sheet and make a squared pizza. Like there's, you know, you don't need to conform to a circle. It's fine. So, you're going to just want to put your dough on whatever pan you're using to bake it. And then you're going to spread it with tomato sauce. So now we're assembling the pizza. So you're going to spread tomato sauce on the dough. And you want to use, at least for my recipe, I like to use about a half of the cheese, a half of the mozzarella cheese after the tomato sauce. So it kind of acts as a glue in the actual like recipe. So one half of the cheese and then the tomatoes on top, and then fresh basil is the best way to go. If you do dried, it's fine. The best way to do dried is you put the dried basil in your hand, and then to kind of like waken up the oils inside, you rub your hands together with the basil in there, and then you can sprinkle it on top of your pizza. But the best way is get your hands on some real fresh basil. So I really like fresh basil, plus it makes your whole kitchen smell so good. So basil on top, and then you're going to add the last half of the cheese. And I mean, who doesn't love cheese? So I mean, that part's great. I love including both halves, and you still get all the cheese that you want on it, but you kind of like layer the ingredients is better for the cheese on the bottom than the cheese on the top. So you like start with cheese and end with cheese. It's great. And then you're going to bake it in a preheated oven of 450 degrees, like I said, for about 15 to 20 minutes or until it's golden brown. And then you're going to let the pizza cool for 5 minutes before serving. And if you have issues with the dough itself kind of cooking on the bottom, it might be the sheet that you're like the baking sheet that you're using or the pizza pan that you're using. But for the most part, you can just cook it a little bit longer than it says, other than the 15 to 20 minutes or until it's golden brown, just so that you get the bottom like crust and it's actually like crunchy and chewy. And I would advise to leave it in as opposed to take it out and like check it a ton of times, because I feel like then your pizza gets soggy that way. So leave it in there until it's golden brown and you think it's crispy on the bottom. You can like lift it and check it and see that way, but keep it in there. So that is my pizza recipe. And if you want an easy pizza dough recipe like this, the one I usually use is from recipes.com, and you just search on recipes.com pizza dough, and it's my favorite recipe to use. It's really easy. There's not much of a hassle to like mix all the ingredients. And the other thing I've realized is that you don't need like a hand mixer or like a pizza dough mixer or like any kind of bread mixer, really. I just use, you know, a fork or a spoon and mix it. And then I use my hands and I get dirty. And it's great because it's a lot of fun. Like I said, try and make pizza with your family or your friends, because it just makes the experience like 10 times more fun. So the second recipe I have for you today is fettuccine alfredo with prosciutto and peas. And this is Emeril Lagasse's recipe. So he's a chef on the Food Network as well. And he, his like favorite line is like, bam, because he like adds whenever he throws in the salt and pepper when he does it. And so it's like, I don't know, it's just some flair and finesse that he does. It's kind of interesting. And he's a really funny gentleman. So this recipe is fettuccine alfredo with prosciutto and peas. So the ingredients include 2 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, 2 shallots minced, 1 tablespoon of minced garlic, 1 cup of heavy cream, salt and freshly ground pepper, 1/4 of a pound of prosciutto, julienne, and 1 cup of frozen peas that have been thawed already, 1/2 cup of freshly grated Parmigiano Reggiano, which is Parmesan cheese, plus more for garnish on top of the whole dish, and then 1 pound of fresh fettuccine pasta. So the way you cook this is you heat olive oil in a large skillet over medium heat. Then you're going to add shallots and garlic and saute for a couple minutes or until tender. Then you're going to add the cream and cook for about 1 to 2 minutes and let that simmer and sit and get real great. And then you're going to season it with salt and pepper to taste. And the reason a lot of recipes say salt and pepper to taste is because if it includes like how much, because you know usually in baking it says like, oh, 1/4 of a teaspoon of salt or whatever. So the reason it says salt and pepper to taste for most recipes that you find is just because you don't want to be throwing in You know, like everybody's taste buds are different. You don't want to be thrown in a bunch of salt and then someone else doesn't like it. So salt and pepper to taste. And when you think it tastes good, that's when you should stop adding stuff. So then you're going to add prosciutto and the peas and toss it gently to combine. You're going to sprinkle cheese over the top and stir it together to melt and combine the cheese as well. And then cook until heated through. So then in a large pot of boiling salted water, add the fettuccine and cook until al dente. Just a couple minutes for fresh pasta, usually. And if you just get the store-bought pasta, just follow the directions for that. Then you're going to drain, reserving 1/4 of a cup of pasta water, and add the reserved pasta water and drained fettuccine to the skillet. And a lot of Italian, I've mentioned this before, but a lot of Italian pasta dishes, they cook both of the things separately. So they cook whatever's in the pasta separately from the actual pasta itself. And that's just because when you put the pasta into what it's supposed to be like mixed with, it just, the like sauce that you made with like the prosciutto and the peas and everything, it's going to combine better when you do it that way, as opposed to just being on top and then you have to like toss it or whatever before you serve. So it's just easier way to do that. So you're going to toss to combine the pasta with the sauce and season with salt and pepper to taste. And usually whoever you're cooking for or just you can just salt and pepper it when you just like plate it. And then you're going to serve with the extra cheese, the extra Parmesan cheese. So that is Emeril Lagasse's fettuccine Alfredo with prosciutto and peas. The next recipe is another listener submitted recipe. I titled it Mrs. M's Easy No Bake Chicken. So the ingredients include 1 whole chicken with the skin on, 1 tablespoon of Lawry's seasoned salt, and 1 teaspoon of Lawry's seasoned pepper, 1 teaspoon of garlic salt, 1 tablespoon of paprika, and 1 orange. So the way you're going to make this is you're going to stir all the seasonings together in a bowl. Then you're going to rub the seasoning all over the skin and underneath the chicken. Then this is actually a crock pot recipe, so it's super time efficient, super easy to make. You just stick it in a crock pot, set it on high, then you slice the oranges in half and place on the bottom of the crock pot, and then you're going to place the chicken on top of the oranges to get all those like sweet citrus flavors. And then you're going to cook on high for 6 hours. And so it's obviously, you guys might or might not know that when you cook in a crock pot, it's super easy because you just throw everything in there. You let it sit all day. So it's and super easy to do it that way. And then when you're ready for dinner, it's totally ready. And then the chicken will end up falling off the bone. And that's like the best way. Who doesn't love, you know, like meat that falls off the bone? It's like perfectly tender and juicy. And I don't know. I'm ready to try this recipe. So thanks, Mrs. M, for submitting that recipe. So we're actually going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more Tasty Time, where we pair your food with your mood. I'm DJ Jazzy J, and you're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. So the song I'm going to play for you today is called Geronimo. I'm actually going to pick a different one. So we're going to go for GDFR. It stands for Going Down For Real. So enjoy this song.
Shake for a shake. I'm throwing these Emirates in the sky. Spinning this awesome llama. Make them piece the M-O-N-E-Y. I love my beaches. South beaches. Surfboard and high tide. I can just roll up because I'm swole up. So that birthday cake get the Cobra. Bugatti for real. I'm Cobra. The autobiography Rover. Got the key to my city. It's over. Snow thoughts only in the color covers. I said rackets, wretches, hold up.
I said rackets, wretches, hold up.
I know you came here to see. If you're afraid, then you come on with me. I know what you came here to do. Now bust it open, let me see you get loose.
It's going down for real. My tents by limousines. My touch say it's the Midas. We the plus your man the minus. My team blowing on that slam. Make you cough, cough, that's bronchitis. Put your hands up. It's a stick up, no more makeup. Get that ass on the floor, ladies. Put your lipstick up. Double entendre, double entendre. Why you hating? I get money, then I double up conkers.
I know you came here to see. If you a freak, then you come out with me. And I know what you came here to do. Now bust it open, let me see you get loose.
It's going down for real.
Celebrity gossip?
Yeah.
What are you doing? Get on Penguin Radio right now and listen to the Hollywood Pileup with your girl Stax from 2 to 3 every Monday.
All right, everyone, we are back with Tasty Time. I'm DJ Jazzy J, and you're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. So that song I played for you was Going Down For Real. It's called GDFR. It's by Flo Rida. And the tag for my friend DJ Stack's show, Hollywood Pileup, was following that. And you guys should check out her show if you guys like Hollywood gossip and interesting things like that. So that was my friend DJ Stax. So in this segment today, this is the second segment of our show today. And so I previously covered how the three recipes were my recipe for homemade margarita pizza, Emeril Lagasse's fettuccine alfredo with prosciutto and peas. And the third recipe was a listener-submitted recipe by Mrs. M. It was Mrs. M's Easy No-Bake Chicken. So those were great recipes. But now we're going into, I'm switching it up today because we actually have a guest. So I'm doing the food reviews you can use now so that when my guest comes, she is ready to talk for the third segment of our show today. So this is the second segment. It is called Food Reviews You Can Use. So this week's topic is this new show on Food Network called Food Fortunes. And it's, like I said, it's a show on Food Network. It's brand new. I think it only has like two or three shows like banked in their website so far. And just a little background on the show. So this is kind of what they say they do. So walk in with an idea, walk out with a fortune. In Food Fortunes, recipe developers, product marketers, and food visionaries have the opportunity to earn cold hard cash from four titans of the industry, all looking to make lucrative investments. Pitching the room, however, has a whole new meaning, as the only way to impress the investors is to win the approval of a panel of consumers. Will these investors' ideas land flat, or will they go home with a good fortune? Investors include restaurateur Willie Deagle, family business mogul and meat lover Pat LaFrieda Jr., and the billionaire owner of Planet Hollywood, Robert Earl. So this show is kind of like a food version of the show Shark Tank, which I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with. But basically, it's kind of funny because I babysit for a family. And when I was babysitting for them, their kids were watching, they turned on the TV and they were watching Shark Tank. And I was like, what is this? And I had never seen it before. And I thought it was so interesting because it's people who bring a product or a business, like a company, to a room of like a couple people who are really high end in the business world or really high end in like marketing and consumerism and those kinds of things. And they take that product, like, so there are normally like one or two people who are part of the company or the product that they're showing. And they go into that like showroom and show the different investors, that are willing to look at their business or their product. And they kind of just showcase their, so like an example would be like if someone made a new, like a new electronic somehow, and they wanted it to be in the consumer world, they would go to them and seek help, like seek money for an investment in their business. And that's kind of what this show called Food Fortunes does. However, with the food side of it, so they're all food, either they're food products or they are like certain contraptions for food. So like essentially like an apple slicer or something like that, where they come up with a new and inventive way to do something related to food. So people bring a product or a company with a concept that they think needs to be in the consumer industry, and the investors decide whether the company and the product are marketable, and they become a success in the consumer world if they partner with one of those investors. And sometimes there are more than one investors. It's kind of like you make a deal based on how good your product is, how well the investors think it's going to do in the industry, and those kinds of things. So I think this is a really interesting show. I watched the first episode I saw of it the other day, and I thought it was really cool because, like I said, I watched Shark Tank, and I think that show itself is interesting. So this is kind of like a spin-off food version of Shark Tank, and I thought it was just really interesting. So that is Food Fortunes. You guys could check it out on the Food Network if you catch it on their days and times that they air the show. You can just check it out online or on your TV. So I think that show is really cool. So the second thing I'm going to review for you today is Greco's New York Pizzeria. Now, I'm not sure if too many people have heard of this before, but it obviously in the title, it's a pizzeria. And although it's a New York pizza, it's like a New York style pizzeria. They're like normal pizzas. However, their slices are so big that if you buy one slice of pizza, it takes up an entire personal sized pizza box. So I thought that was really interesting. So a little bit of history on Greco's New York Pizzeria. In 1979, three brothers opened the doors to Greco's New York Pizzeria in Hollywood. And since then, they have expanded to multiple locations throughout the greater Los Angeles area. And more than 35 years later, Greco's is still family-owned and operated, and they continue to provide quality food and service to the neighbors of the Hollywood or greater Los Angeles area. So, like I mentioned, I went there myself. I've been there a couple times. It's in Hollywood. There are a couple locations, but the one I went to is on Hollywood Boulevard. There are two different ones. There's one a little bit farther down Hollywood Boulevard, and then there's one literally about a half a block away from Pantages Theater, which I went when I saw Wicked and then when I visited Hollywood as well. And I don't know, for some reason when I'm in Hollywood, I'm craving that pizzeria. So every time I'm there, I get a pizza slice from there. And like I said, their pizza slices are so big, it's like a meal in itself. So there are many places in and around Hollywood, but this one has been my favorite so far. And the one I've been to is down the street from the Pantages Theater, and it's not that far from Musso and Frank's, if you guys have ever been there. That's a big celebrity hotspot as well. And they have four locations, like I mentioned, in the greater Los Angeles area, including Sherman Oaks, Terzana at Tampa, Hollywood at Highland, and Hollywood at Cahuenga. So those are the four different locations. So I urge you guys to check those out if you're ever in the Hollywood area. It's called Greco's New York Pizzeria. So those are my two food reviews you can use for this week. So I'm going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back with my special guest for this week. So we'll be right back with more Tasty Time with me, DJ Jazzy J. Stay tuned to hear the person I'm going to interview for this week. And you're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. So the song I'm going to play for you is, I'm going to play a Taylor Swift song. So it's called How You Get the Girl. So enjoy.
Kisses on cheeks and say you want me.
compare. Lessons are easily done once you had a taste of perfection, like an apple hanging from a tree. I pick the ripest one. I still got the seed. You said
All right, everyone, we're back. This is DJ Jazzy J, and you're listening to Tasty Time here on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. So we just finished up the segment I called Feed Reviews You Can Use, and we talked about a new show on Food Network called Food Fortunes. It's kind of the food version of Shark Tank. And I also reviewed Greco's New York Pizzeria in Hollywood, California. So now I have my friend Liani here. So say hi, Liani.
Hey, everybody. How's everyone doing?
So, introduce yourself, Liani.
My name is Liani. I work here at Dominican University in campus ministry and student life, and a self-proclaimed food lover. I think everywhere I travel, I like to just, like, find food that is delicious and amazing and eat it all.
I agree with you. Yeah, I think food and traveling go hand in hand with one another. So that's great. Actually, she was. So I talked to my listeners about my spring break.
That's great.
And what I did on spring break. And she was the one that we went to the restaurant and ate the big giant cinnamon rolls. So
bigger,
you were the one that found
than
that.
Your head.
Yeah.
Although yeah. On Yelp, there needs to be a review that says that the cinnamon bun is there. Because
true.
I did not know that it was there until somebody ordered it. And I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Branding iron.
Yeah. Yes. The
Get
branding
it together.
Iron.
Tell people about your cinnamon
But
buns.
The funny thing was I actually ended up like Yelping it later. And I saw all of your pictures and everything and like what you wrote underneath them. And I was like reliving the experience all over again.
I like adding pictures to places that don't really get that much publicity.
Yeah.
On Yelp especially too.
Yeah. I agree with you. Yelp is a great tool. Mm-hmm. So, if you had to rate how good of a home cook you are on a scale between beginner, intermediate, good, and pro, what would you say you are and why?
I would say good.
Okay.
I'm definitely not intermediate, but I'm one of those people who I'll look at a recipe and then maybe follow it.
Okay.
So I enjoy cooking a lot. I don't get home early enough to cook as much as I would like. During the summer, I'll probably cook a lot more. I definitely really enjoy having a kitchen because I was living on campus for about 4 years. I can talk a little bit about, I can make lots of different little things in a rice cooker and a George Foreman grill. That's
like
a
what?
College life for you. Well, I can make a whole steamed, like I can make steamed broccoli and then pasta and then a steak for you and then like mix a salad.
Ooh,
so
yum.
That's kind of like the thing, but you can also steam corn in rice cooker. You can steam a piece of salmon, although because salmon on a George Foreman grill kind of gets sticky and it doesn't
yes, it
really
does.
doesn't really look as pretty. The steak on the George Foreman is good though. You got to watch out for the smoke in the residence hall. It's the
yeah.
only thing.
Yeah, and I think like a rice cooker, like a crock pot, is really good too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, there are a lot of, and I just talked about that actually, because one of my recipes included a crock pot, and I just think it's a very versatile tool to have in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So, are you better at cooking or baking?
Cooking.
Why?
I'm not as good as because I'm not good at following recipes. I like to add different things, and I'm. When baking, I'm now starting to realize that there's a reason why there's an order in baking.
Yeah.
And the all of the ingredients are measured out so specifically because it's like a chemical reaction. You know, the cookie. Have you seen that picture before that has all like the 8 different kinds of cookies? And then it says like, this is how cookie looks if you use more sugar, or this is how cookie looks when you use more butter, or this is when you refrigerate it overnight. Like now I kind of understand, because every time I make cookies or used to make cookies, they would be different every single time. And that's because I do not follow recipes.
Yeah. And I've discussed on this show before that, and I'll tell you now that I'm not really a baker. I'm more of a chef, and I like to cook more. And I've said that it's because I don't like measuring things. So
I just like chopping it up and throwing it in.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Mm-hmm. You like to just kind of make your own. Like you'll follow a recipe, but not as much. And then you'll add whatever you want to it.
Yeah. In my regular everyday cooking, I usually just see what's in the refrigerator and then cook that. When I'm at a grocery store, a lot of times I'll just buy the things that look delicious. And or I think so. For example, last week I bought portobello mushrooms, asparagus, a whole thing of arugula salad. Although I like the herb salad better, but the arugula was like, there was no herb salad for some reason at the Safeway I went to.
Oh.
So went stuck for the arugula because it's a good, like solid, good, like nutritious green.
Mm-hmm.
What else did I buy? I don't remember. But I ended up, my friend made a ham. So I brought home leftovers from that. So I've been like chopping that up and putting it in things. I make a lot of omelets. Eggs are so easy that's something that I make a lot. I also like to like reheat pasta and put a fried egg over medium on top of it. That's
so good.
Really good. Recipes though. So if I go somewhere, so for example, maybe when I went to France and there's like a recipe for, what is that one beef dish that Julia Child's, the Julia and Julia movie? Oh. It was like, oh, beef bourguignon.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
The beef bourguignon. So, like, those types of things I would follow a recipe for because I want it to come out the way that it's described in the recipe. Or if I cook Filipino food, there is a specific way that you should do it. Okay. I mean, there's things that, like, I feel like my family has added on their own. But if it's a kind of, like, ethnic-specific dish, then I will follow a recipe. But if it's just my own pasta, then whatever's in the refrigerator is going to go in and be delicious.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I was actually going to touch upon that, but you kind of already got there. Could you tell the listeners what your ethnic and, like, cultural background is?
Sure. Yeah, so I'm Filipino, and but when my family, so I grew up eating Filipino food because my grandmother's a really good cook. And whenever I would go over to her house, she would always have at least 3 pots on the stove full of different types of food and leftovers in the fridge that you could use. And a pot of rice that, like, was always full. So that's a lot of my background. My mom, a lot of times, my younger brother actually did an assignment where they asked about what were, like, the 5 different things that are always going to be found in your home for groceries or something. And he said olive oil, soy milk, tortillas, like chicken, and I can't remember what the other thing was. But like that kind of, oh, and rice. And that so that goes to show a little bit of the variety that my family kind of grew up eating. And my parents were always taking us to eat Indian food, taking us to eat Chinese food, Thai food, Mexican food. So a lot of different flavors. I grew up with a lot of different flavors and an adventurous palate. I met a lot of people in college that had never had Indian food until they got to college. And that was something that I had been eating since like 5th grade. So I think that that's kind of my background. I haven't cooked as much Filipino food. Not having a kitchen, it makes it difficult to, well, before not having a kitchen. Now I have a kitchen, and like the first 5 months that I had it, I was cooking all these different types of Filipino foods.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So what is your favorite thing to cook then?
That's really hard. I really don't know. I really don't know because I really like cooking for other people. And I haven't done that as much as I would like to in the past due to, like, busy schedule and everything. My favorite thing to cook, I do pasta a lot.
That's a staple.
Yeah, I do pasta a lot. I wouldn't say that I have, like, a recipe that's my go-to recipe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not
but
everyone
I mean,
does.
Yeah, but, I mean, I can cook a chicken and, like, have asparagus and... Yeah. Like I so last night I was telling Jessica earlier that I had a funny story about cooking because I went home early yesterday to cook this fish that was a rock fish, which is kind of like a snapper, and it's from the science department here on campus. So one man's science project is another woman's dinner.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it went. And I ended up kind of cooking it Asian style, so I steamed the whole thing. Not everybody likes to eat the entire fish, but I do. I think it's probably part of my Filipino heritage.
Yeah.
Like not wanting to waste anything. Mm-hmm. And also knowing that some of the like kind of more gristly bits are really flavorful. Ended up cooking that kind of Asian style, steaming it with shoyu and soy sauce and sesame oil and ginger, garlic, and green onions. So I think that... I really like rich foods. You know, if I was to center on something this summer to learn to do, it'd probably be like learning how to make more French sauces. Because those French sauces are so, that's like the richness of what makes things taste so good.
Mm-hmm.
But along also with, sometimes I just need to stick to, you know, a rotisserie chicken with salad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes to keep it exactly. Mm-hmm. I was going to say that sometimes you need to just keep it simple.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what my show, like in essence is about, is just kind of like I say at the beginning, it's to help the average cook do like great things in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily like, you know, make this big elaborate like 5-course meal. It's just kind of like something that you could feed your family or yourself or your significant other or something. Just like just to feed whoever you're, you know, providing food for, a simple, really tasty like dish, whatever. Hopefully, it is.
Yeah, and healthy.
Yeah, healthy, mm-hmm. exactly. Sometimes it's nice to splurge, but you
oh,
know.
Totally. I like, use bacon, bacon fat in everything.
Yeah. Oh, and one of my shows was actually all about like sweets. It was the week before Easter. So, mm-hmm. So did you grow up cooking with your parents? And if so, what age did you start in the kitchen?
I'd say that I was baking cookies when I was like 7 years old. And I remember bringing cookies when I was in third grade to class and having my teacher ask me whether or not they were homemade and from scratch. And I was like, absolutely, yeah, I made these. So cookies were something that I always really enjoyed doing and enjoyed making. I think that my mom, I don't really remember her teaching me, but I must have watched a lot. Because by the time I was in junior high, she would leave something out and she would tell me to cook it. Mm. So she would leave a chicken out and say, just put salt and pepper on it and then, you know, make sure that you put it in the oven. I've been the person that cooks the turkey in my family for the past like 10 years.
Mm. And For Thanksgiving.
Yeah. And my family usually does a turkey for like just us. Mm-hmm. So the five of my two brothers, well, my older brother's vegan, so he doesn't eat the turkey, but, for the five of us, and then we go to two Thanksgivings because my dad's family lives in Vallejo, my mom's family lives in Daly City. So we eat quite a bit of turkey during Thanksgiving, and I always end up cooking maybe one for myself, or, you know, you have a Friendsgiving, so yeah. Cook one of those and then one for family. I really enjoy it for some reason.
Yeah, it's nice to be with family and to cook also, and that's mm-hmm. something that I've said before. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I don't like that your whole like experience with cooking in the kitchen or having your mom tell you what to cook for dinner. Yeah. I've done that a couple times. And like we used to, when I was a little bit younger in my family, my parents would say, okay, like because we cook all the time, we're going to give one day a week for you to cook and you have to come up with something that you want to cook, something you want to eat. And one of my go-tos actually was like kebabs just because they're so good.
Yeah. And it's always like really flavorful.
And in the summertime, it's like the best. If it's not like a barbecue, like big event, kebabs are like my go-to. They're so good. And you can use like sausage, you can use chicken, you can use shrimp. It's mm-hmm. very versatile.
Yeah.
Yeah. So while cooking like in the kitchen, has anything you've cooked turned out to taste really bad or just like didn't work or like burned or something?
Oh, I come from a long line of, well, maybe not a long line, but my mom, she would hate me if she knew I was talking about this, but she's one of those women who, and I think I've also kind of taken on this characteristic where she'll turn something on and maybe like water to boil or like soup or something that's just like on the stove, and she'll start reading a book or she'll start a TV show or start doing laundry and then completely get distracted. And then all of a sudden you're like, is something burning? Oh no. And she'd totally freak out and run out. And then, oh, there have been so many times where dishes and things were ruined.
You get preoccupied.
We forgot. Yeah. And we forget to set a timer.
Yeah.
And so I have that in my blood to be distracted. And I've definitely at my house accidentally like started boiling water and then left things and burnt the pan.
That's why you got a crock pocket.
Crock pots are great. Or just don't leave the kitchen. I think that's something that's really important.
That's true.
Like if you're going to read, maybe just like sit, have a little space there to read.
I'm a hoverer. Like mm-hmm. I literally don't want to leave the kitchen because I'm like, I need to make sure everything is like mm-hmm. in its place and like planned out.
But I'm also somebody too who like, unless it's cooking on the stove or in the oven for a long time, I'm usually someone who's doing many other things in the kitchen at the same time.
True. I do that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what is the best memory you can think of in the kitchen?
Best memory in the kitchen. I think now a lot of the memories that I have cooking are with my really good friends. Because in college, you're kind of partying a lot. And then even after college a little bit too. Or you're going out for dinner. And now really, we find that the quality time is the most important. So we cook a lot together, and as we're cooking, we drink wine and we talk about, like, because we don't see each other as much, we talk about what's going on in our lives, and those are the best memories now. Memories in the kitchen with family. I think is, well, my mom, you know the term, too many cooks in the kitchen?
Yes.
My mom and my aunts and my grandmother, a lot of times I just, like, sit back because there's a little too much, too many people in there telling people what to do or, like, telling people not to touch things. I think now it really is forming my own memories in the kitchen because having my own home and really enjoying making kind of new memories is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. Making new memories in the kitchen is, I mean, when you do have a kitchen, because I live in college and I don't really have a kitchen yet. But I can't wait to kind of make those memories of my own in the kitchen with my friends, mm-hmm. too. Yeah. So what was your favorite thing to eat as a child?
As a child?
It could even be like a snack food. It doesn't
have
to be like
a
full.
I ate a lot of ramen as a kid. That was a go-to meal for us.
Like plate up or just ramen itself?
I would put ramen and maybe do like egg drop in it. And if we had like bok choy, I'd put that inside of it. I also kind of, one of the comfort foods that I remember growing up with is fried bologna and rice with like like scrambled egg. Like Yum. Not really, not delicious, like, you know, but a comfort food.
Yeah, exactly.
That was something that like.
Especially as a kid.
Yeah, when there wasn't really anything to eat, like mm-hmm. that would be. You'd fry up the bologna, you know, it makes a little hat kind of on the stove.
Yeah.
And then, you know, chop it up with some rice and mm-hmm. some egg. I haven't had that in a really long time, though.
I was a big supporter of bologna for a really long time.
Bologna
and cheese sandwiches were my staple in school.
Yeah, I wasn't a peanut butter and jelly person growing up.
Me either. I couldn't. My sister was, but I could not. I was like bologna and cheese, salami and cheese,
salami. Mm-hmm.
Turkey and cheese, anything but the staple of peanut butter and jelly. Because I was like, that's just too, I need it to be changing.
My family wasn't, we didn't really do peanut butter and jelly. Mm. We did a lot of like leftovers for lunch. So we had things left over from the night before. You'd bring it with rice to school.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I used to have to pack my own lunches. So it was kind of just whatever I figured out in the kitchen to make into a sandwich. Yeah. Or I also really liked egg salad sandwich. And that's, I'd have those like on like the days of Lent where you couldn't eat meat.
Yeah.
Egg salad was my go-to, and my whole family did that. So in the morning, I'd get up and boil eggs for like my whole family and make egg salad for all of us. So
macaroni and cheese was also. I mean, I have to say, when I think of being little now, I really think of like before, like 10 years and younger, and like junior high. I mean, I was eating Indian food for my 11th birthday. I think we were in Davis to go to an all-you-can-eat Indian buffet. So that was something that was. I say that I crave things on a regular basis. I crave sushi, Filipino food, Indian food, and Thai food. Like, it just kind of rotates around of what I'm, like, feeling.
So I was going to ask you what your favorite kind of food was.
Oh, I'm sushi. It's, like, definitely a... I'm an addict.
Yes.
It's dangerous.
And I did sort of know that about you, but you've definitely talked to me about it more, so I'm like, yes. Okay, now I know... Liani loves sushi.
Yeah.
So as someone who doesn't know much about sushi, I've been to like a sushi restaurant like maybe a couple times.
Have you been to any in San Rafael or
no.
is it?
Mm-hmm. It's all been at home. They opened a new one by my house. It's called Atun. And I went there like a couple weeks after it opened with a friend of mine. And that was really one of the only times I've had sushi ever other than... Which is really not sushi, but like Trader Joe's buying it from, you know, it's just, and
Whole
like maybe
Foods
one
has
other
a little
place.
Bit better sushi than Trader Joe's.
Okay, that's
say.
Good to know, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was just going to ask you, as someone who doesn't know much about it, if you could explain some of the different types of sushi.
Sure. Yeah, so sushi in general, I mean, it's Japanese food, but in the United States, it's a little bit, you know, we take kind of a twist on ethnic foods here. And in the Bay Area, there's a lot of fusion type things. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to go to a sushi restaurant, so to tell the difference, like makis are the rolls, and it could be the seaweed either on the outside or the seaweed kind of in the middle with the rice on the outside. Mm-hmm. And that's filled with anything from like shrimp or tempura or raw fish, cucumber, avocado, different ingredients. And then there's one that's called nigiri where it's a fish on the bottom. It's kind of like a little... like appetizer almost, but you can eat it as like a whole meal. So nigiri. And usually when you order in one order, it comes with two. So it's rice on the bottom and then raw fish on the top. Very simple. That's kind of the most authentic Japanese food that you can get kind of here, where it's like that's going to be very similar to what you would get in Japan, is the fish on top and then on the bottom.
Okay.
The rice on the bottom. Sashimi is just raw fish.
Okay. That I did know.
Mm-hmm. So that is like, so if you order a plate of sashimi, then it's going to be like maybe like 4 pieces of raw tuna, 4 pieces of salmon. There's a thing called shirashi, and it's raw fish on a bed of sushi rice and like sesame and seaweed flakes. Okay. I mean, there's other things too in Japanese food. Like they have like udon with different noodles and let's see, teriyaki chicken, salmon chicken. That's kind of more United States. And some places that you're going to go to, they have like the really giant rolls where they have, you know, eel and tempura shrimp, spicy tuna, and then like wrapped in the roll. Mm-hmm. And then on top, they're going to have things too. So that's like, those are like big ones.
What are the ones that are like the cones with like this?
Oh, those are hand rolls.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Hand rolls. And they also have ones that are kind of like, it's nigiri, but it's rice. And then there's like seaweed around it. And then you put little, so like fish eggs in it. So it's like a little bowl. Almost like a seaweed bowl.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then there's things like they have a omelet type. What's called tamago. Okay. And so it's like a sweet omelet.
That's
kind of cleanses your palate. And then there's wasabi, of course, and the ginger, pickled ginger and soy sauce, which you use kind of as the palate cleansers or a little bit of more flavor. Or if you really like spice, you have that kind of really nose horseradishy flavor from the wasabi.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think sushi has become a big, like, I know it's really common among college students.
It's way more popular now.
Yes.
Yeah. I think, and it's more affordable, too.
I was going to ask you that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Marin has some places that are really expensive, depending on what you're going to get. But, like, Kamikaze Sushi in Montecito Plaza, they have a happy hour from 5 to 6 or 5 to 6:30 from Monday to Thursday. And they have $2 hand rolls, $2
sushi.
Wow,
you got to try that out.
Yeah, like sake bombs and beer, if you're 21 and over, of course.
Yeah.
But it's a really good deal, and it's a good introduction. Although, I know a lot of people, for them, the raw fish, it's a texture thing, you know, and or they just can't really get over the fact that this is not cooked. Sometimes I eat sushi and I'm like, I don't know why I love it so much. I don't know why it tastes so good to me. But there's just something about it that has really become a go-to food for me. I've been almost, I think, all the sushi restaurants in Marin.
Wow.
I know. Over the course of the 6 years that I've lived here.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. So the final question today, if you had to give a person who said that they can't cook, if you had to give them advice, what would you tell them?
I would say to start out small. Start out small. If they wanted to take a cooking class, to take a cooking class. Or even just thinking about what's their favorite food and looking up a recipe and just trying it. On the Food Network website, they actually have recipes and you can choose based upon easy and like just difficulty level. And so I think that's a really good way to do it. Or, I mean, some people just don't like to cook. I don't quite understand how not to cook because it kind of comes, maybe it's not natural, but it's something that I've grown up doing. So being able to throw something together comes a little bit more naturally to me. Some people need a recipe. Cooking with friends is probably a really good thing to do for somebody who has no experience. Stir fries are really, just put a little bit of that soy sauce on there, cut those vegetables up, garlic. Yeah.
You're making me hungry.
I love people that talk about food while they're eating food. I think that's really funny. Yeah, and that's totally my friends and I. We eat everything.
That's awesome.
Order everything on the menu.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think that's some really good advice. That's some awesome advice for people that say that they can't cook, because I have many friends that say that they can't cook or they just won't, and they eat takeout all the time. I'm like, I can't do that.
Yeah, start with easy things.
I completely agree. So
boil an egg.
Yeah, even an egg. Mm-hmm. So today's question of the day that prompted you to stay to the end of today's show was, cook them, mash them up, dehydrate them, reconstitute them with moisture to make a dough, cut into a uniform size and shape, and package in an airtight container. They were introduced in 1969 by Procter & Gamble. What were they when they started out, and what is the name of the final packaged product? So if you stayed until the very end, thank you so much. The answer is potatoes, and they are processed into Pringles potato chips.
Mm.
Did you know that?
Pringles potato chips.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much, Liani, for joining me today.
Thank you, Jessica, for having me.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in today to Tasty Time with me, DJ Jazzy J. I'll be here next Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m. here on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. Thanks for listening.